What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Well, as we've learned in the last several weeks, it's still 1693 in Massachusetts, and the witch trials continue on. The Lindsay Clancy trial, the modern-day equivalent of it, continues, and we're going to break down what's going on with the prosecution, what's going on with the defense, and what's going on with all of the allegations against Patrick Clancy, and what inroads he may have for some of you out there who like to say that he killed his kids in terms of going after you legally. We're going to be covering all that today. To do that, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. And of course, Eric Fattis, defense attorney and former prosecutor, to help us break all of this down. Let's start in the area of the prosecution today. And we certainly welcome your thoughts in the comment section, wherever you're watching us as we work our way through this case. It's obviously we're 3 weeks in now. The prosecution appears to have a bit of a problem going on that it's built for itself. Every provider that it's put on the stand right now to prove Lindsay was sane has handed Reddington a cross-examination gift, basically showing, yeah, she wasn't in her right mind. She wasn't in a good place. And we didn't do anything to help her get into that right mind, which you, the prosecution, have to prove that she was in. So how do they land this ship? That's a good question. The prosecution's strongest premeditation evidence is the Google search of ways to kill on Lindsay's phone. But even that is a bait and switch because it's a omission of fact, ways to kill. She's like, yeah, I was looking that up for myself. The prosecution wants you to believe it was for the children. It was for all of this. When in fact, no, that's not what she was actually looking up. Eric, how does that land with a jury? Because there feels like there's been a lot of bait and switches here, or we're just going to kind of give you a little nugget of this, and then Reddington shows up and says, and here's the full picture, and you realize, huh, I'm basing my decision just off of this little nugget of information that really changes the context of what's actually being presented. It's kind of treating the jury like they're infantile children. That's the way I'm feeling about it. What's your take, and how do juries typically respond when one side of a courtroom omits a lot to get a picture to look a certain way, and then they're shown the full scan of things?
Tony, you know, I think lawyers sometimes, you know, they have a case, they really want it to be good. And so they sort of look through all the evidence and they cherry pick little things. And sometimes they're out of context. Sometimes they're incomplete statements of evidence and things like that. And they on paper, they're like, hey, this looks pretty good, right? And they're talking in their echo chamber with their other attorney buddies on their side. They're like, yeah, that looks pretty good. But then you get into that truth-seeking gauntlet of a jury trial, and the entire picture comes out, and the jury sees it, and they're like, hey, were you trying to pull the wool over our eyes? Why did you not tell me this really important piece of this larger presentation you're making? Are you trying to be misleading to me and dupe me? And so I think juries can really get offended once they hear the other side, once they get the full context, and they're like, oh, that's probably what that actually meant. Oh, prosecutor, you didn't tell us that. What else are you not telling us?
And that's interesting because, I mean, it's watching the reactions and the comments out there on social media. I feel like there's not a, it's very black and white on this. It's either people are willingly walking into the wool being pulled over their eyes and they're happy about it. They're like, pull some more wool down because we don't really want to see the scariness of what people are capable of. So pull away. People are willingly wanting that and ignoring facts, which I'm going to guess in the pool of 18 people, there may be a few people that are very comfortable with extra wool over their eyes. But then you also have the folks who are offended, are really taken aback by that and are viscerally upset that one would try to do this when you're trying to get to the truth of a case. To me, that reads as we're going to have a hung jury at the end of the day, because both sides are very vested in their way of thinking, in their way of operating in this world that we live in. And it's very, it goes down to very core beliefs of how things operate. And those aren't easy things to change. And it seems a lot of this really goes down to the core of how we believe humans interact with one another, much more deeper than other cases. How do you think it's going to play with a jury in those lanes where it does go so deep viscerally?
You know, that's the thing is you have three dead babies, three dead children. And there are people who just hear that and regardless of what their reality might be, they want it to turn out a certain way. They want this person to either be crucified and you know, thrown in a box for the rest of her life, or they want this person to have some compassion and for the world to understand that there was something very psychologically wrong going on, according to those folks. And so it's very polarizing. And sometimes when you're sort of in this lane, you have these blinders on and you don't want to hear facts that conflict with that. You might try to ignore other information that is contradictory to the outcome you really want. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these jurors came in here thinking, oh, three dead kids, something has to be done to this lady, or three dead kids and a mental health issue, we have to go this other route on the case. Mm-hmm. And whether they will deviate from those viscerally held positions, like you said, is questionable.
Yeah, Eric, I'm you know, speaking of that, I'm so curious because, like we're saying, people have been really, really dug in one way or the other on this case, with very few, I think, defections going either way. Although, from research I've seen online, if they're going to go anyway, they actually have been moving more towards the sympathetic side, just because of what's being presented in the courtroom. You see the behaviors of Lindsay and Kevin Reddington. It's been pretty compelling. But when you're both the prosecutor and defense attorney and you're looking at prospective jurors, how are you doing the best you can? Like, what kind of questions are in that questionnaire for you to really discern who's actually got an open mind and who's actually a thinker and can interrogate information as opposed to someone who's not?
Really important. And one thing you delve into on that piece, Robin, is prior experiences for these folks, because that can absolutely shape a human being. It can provide the lens through which they view evidence. So you're asking, hey, you know, do you have children? And if so, has anything bad ever happened to them? And, you know, you're going to find folks who have lost children, who have lost children to violence, who have lost children to horrible accidents that were not criminal in nature. And you really need to try and evaluate how those events, as traumatic as they were, may have affected that juror. Because if you have a juror who lost a kid to a violent act, and the trial is about allegations of killing a child through violence, well, if your defense, then that's a red flag. You're going to say, hey, I'm worried this person is, you know, that prior experience is going to or influence their mindset in terms of how they're evaluating this. And so those prior experiences and how they shape these potential jurors are really important to inquire into during jury selection.
How do these attorneys agree that, all right, we're going to both agree that these jurors are good for us? I mean, it's like in a case like this, it's really kind of blowing my mind. For the reasons you said, that would, you know, that'd be a case of clearly, you know, the prosecution would want this person, the defense wouldn't. And then you bring up the other ones, you know, the defense would want it, prosecution doesn't. I mean, how does, I mean, I know it's asking that age old question. How's a sausage made on this one? Because in these really, really, you know, tragic cases where there's really, really going to be strong opinions, how do they come to a conclusion about who can be on this jury and everyone's happy with it?
And oftentimes, Robin, everyone is not happy with it. And it's kind of like, you know, the prosecution wants 5 out of the 30 on the jury for sure, because they're really helpful and really receptive to the prosecution's arguments. The defense wants 5 who are really receptive to defense. And what happens through what are called peremptory challenges, that's where one side gets to kick off somebody without cause, without any significant reason, just because they don't like them. And so the prosecution kicks off the 5 the defense wants. The defense kicks off the 5 the prosecution wants. And now we're in a situation where we have these remaining folks. They're going to be on the jury, and everyone's just kind of got to live with that. So you're not always super jazzed about who's on there. Sometimes it's who's left.
And so basically, they're allowed to kick a certain amount of off, but then that's it. You have what you have.
Kind of. You have causes for challenge are challenges for cause, and then peremptory challenges to jurors. Peremptory challenges, you get a limited amount, usually like 3 to 6 or something. And then challenges for cause are because the law says this person shouldn't be on, like they're a police officer, so they can't be on a case where a police officer is a witness, things like that.
All right, thank you.
Every provider who has testified, the psychiatrist, the nurse practitioner, the therapist, told the jury that Lindsay never disclosed that she wanted to hurt herself or anyone else. The prosecution is using that to prove that she wasn't psychotic. See, she never said. Does the "she never told us" prove that she was sane, or does it prove nobody was actually asking the right questions like, you know, doctors should, not relying on the patient to come in and go, "I am having psychotic thoughts." Like, people don't walk into the doctor's office going, "I have a tumor the size of this on part of my body you can't see. Well, why didn't they tell it?" I mean, it's really, I don't understand why this or how this argument is even being made of, "Well, she didn't tell us." That's not her job. Your job is to dig in and is to figure out what the hell is going on with this woman. Not just she's telling you, "Give me some meds," and you give them to her. You talk, you dig, you find out. And clearly we've had great examples in this trial of that not being done. The jury has seen the medical establishment not doing their job, not asking the adequate questions to get where they need to go to help serve this woman the need in the needs that she has and the way that she needs to be served. So I guess I'm just kind of baffled. How does the prosecution try to hang their hat on, "Well, she didn't tell us. She didn't tell us everything"? That's not how that works.
It's definitely not how it works. And Tony, as you know, there are so many disincentives for a person to voice concerns about feeling like they might want to harm themselves. One, there's a stigma attached to it, of course. Two, it's going to be in medical records and preserved for perpetuity down the road. Who knows who might request those records at a later time. On top of that, if you voice concerns about self-harm, you might be admitted to a mental hospital on a psychiatric hold. And so there are a lot of disincentives to bringing it up. Also, someone who might be in such disarray cognitively, emotionally, psychologically, and otherwise, they might not have a really great grasp on exactly what's going on inside and how to express that in an articulate fashion to these providers under very distressing, difficult circumstances. So all of those really kind of explain why a person in that position might not expressly say, "Hey, yeah, I'm suicidal."
Yeah, I mean, the prosecution's opening had the line of, "She chose to deal with her mental health issues in the worst possible way." And that seems to be just how they're stepping on the gas through this whole thing, despite plowing into walls and running over everything along the way. It just feels like reckless driving on the part of the prosecution in terms of how they're handling, chose to deal with mental health issues in the worst possible way. Do you think that's how it's landing with the jury, with her begging doctors week after week, month after month for help, trying anything and everything that they suggested or gave her, going to inpatient, going to outpatient, checking all the boxes of everything someone should do and then some? I'm failing to see how she's dealing with this in the worst possible way. Do you think a jury is going to fail to see that as well?
You know, in my mind, dealing with this in the worst possible way might look something like this person's experiencing some issues. They're beginning to act out. They're behaving erratically. Family members are concerned. They're saying, hey, why don't you go see a counselor? And the person says, hey, screw that, man. I'm just going to do what I want to do. Hey, why don't you consider some medication? No, I don't need any of that. I'm going to deal with this my way. And then ultimately things escalate and there's some horrible incident that happens. That would be dealing with things in the worst possible way. That's kind of the opposite of how Lindsay Clancy appeared to deal with these when she was seeking treatment, seeking medication, trying her best to get a handle on all of this. That doesn't seem like dealing with it in the worst possible way at all. I think the prosecutors overplayed their hand there.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, Tony, I'm still reflecting on that really good analogy you just made, and that is, you know, so let's put it on the physical aspect of the body that, you know, say Lindsay had a lump, and she goes into a doctor because she doesn't know what this lump is, and she kept getting the runaround, and every time she's like gives another med and the lump's still there, give another med and she's still feeling worse, and now she's getting really symptomatic of something having to do with this lump, and she keeps getting bounced around, and eventually, you know, instead of her dying from that lump, her kids wind up dying for the lump, all because, you know, she couldn't tell me what was wrong with her. Well, that's their job to figure out. It might have been cancer, could have been something else. Really good analogy. And you did it on another piece earlier today, and that is, you know, the Nick Reiner comparison. You know, Nick Reiner, who was offered so much help, kept turning it down, kept scoffing at it, and winds up sitting in wait for his parents' album that just came out yesterday, yeah, as opposed to Lindsay, who was seeking.
Yeah, very different.
Very different.
Very, very different cases. We're going to talk about the defense's case, where their landing points with the jury, maybe where they could improve. But first, this is really interesting. It seems Massachusetts might be finding this case, as polarizing it as it is, to be a popular way to bring people in for tourism. Check this out.
Massachusetts, where history still comes alive. Looking for a place where the authorities don't let science get in the way of a good story? You'll feel right at home. Since 1692, Massachusetts has been the nation's leader in skipping the facts and going straight to the verdict. 13 medications in 4 months? A psychiatric hospital stay? A journal full of cries for help? Doesn't matter. If we can't understand it, you must have planned it. It's not a bug. It's a tradition.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather helped rid Salem of its witches. Every single day, I carry on that fight. Back then, we called them witches. Now we just call them Lindsay Clancy. Either way, we get the job done.
And while you're here, meet the locals. Our online community is home to some of the most dedicated investigators in the country. They don't need medical records. They don't need a degree. They watched a 45-second video, and they just know. The husband? Suspicious. Was he at CVS? Sure. Did he call 911 screaming? Technically. But does that feel right? Here in Massachusetts, we don't let details get in the way of a perfectly good theory. You'll find people who've already solved a case the actual jury hasn't finished hearing yet. That's not arrogance. That's efficiency. And really, why would you waste time understanding postpartum psychosis when you could just decide she's evil and get on with your day? Massachusetts, where we've been wrong about women for over 300 years and never been more confident. Visit soon. Stay as long as you like. Just don't get sick.
Around here, a breakdown and a broomstick are still the same thing.
There you go.
Burning in hell.
makes you wish I had made some other plans to visit Massachusetts this summer. Seems like a lovely place. Seems like a lovely place. I like the where a breakdown and the broomstick are still the same thing.
I'll just add my historical context, everything, because we were talking about this offline the other day. So one of my favorite authors, Noah Harari, wrote the book Sapiens, Homo Deus, and a book Nexus. He's an anthropologist, talks about human evolution. And his last book, Nexus, he talks about the evolution of human communication. And because he goes at the fact that just because our modern thought process that we have as a species is, well, if a lot of people believe it and a lot of people think it, it must be true. Mm-hmm. And he actually, where we talk about the witch trials, is because that's exactly what happened. And so in the 1400s, when the printing press was invented in Europe, the first thing the printing press did was eliminate about 60,000 women through witch trials, because the church wanted to make money from indulgences. And the best way to do that was claim everyone's a witch and you can buy your way out of it. So it was really fascinating how they used the printing press to put out pamphlets about the warning signs of witchcraft and about how we need to get rid of witchcraft by burning them at the stake. And so that was mass media back in the 1400s, and we are still subjected to that groupthink mentality now. That's why we need critical thinking to move through it.
It's a really interesting analogy there, Robin, because, I mean, yeah, that was mass media then. Look at it today. It seems like the more ways we have to communicate with each other, the more closed off to understanding each other we get. And that's really scary. You'd think it would be the opposite, but it actually seems to pull people further in and less out of understanding. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.